Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, March 23rd. In the surge of child migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border are some who are trying to reach family in New York. New York One reports that four local nonprofits are already vetting some of the children's local contacts or arranging foster care, and that refugee resettlement groups are ramping up capacity to accommodate an expected surge. With me now are the New York City Immigration Affairs Commissioner, Bita Mustafi, and Maria Odom, Vice President for Legal Programs at Kids in Need of Defense, or KIND. She leads a team of immigration and social services professionals serving unaccompanied migrant and refugee children in the U.S. and Mexico. She was previously the Citizenship and Immigration Services Ombudsman for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security under President Obama and chair of the department's Blue Campaign, as it was called, their effort to combat human trafficking. So, Commissioner Mustafi, welcome back. Ms. Odom, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Commissioner, are children who are coming to the border beginning to be resettled in New York with family members they are trying to reach or with other guardians?
Yeah, thank you, Brian. So as you know well, and many of your listeners, there are a number of ORR, Office of Refugee Resettlement, contracted organizations here in our city that on a regular course of business are responsible and contracted to receive unaccompanied children to ensure that the care for them is what is required under law and is the right standard of care while they actively and quickly seek to reunite them with sponsors, with family members and loved ones that can care for them while they're seeking to complete their cases. And we do know that there are children here in our city now with some of these providers. They have, and Mario can speak with great authority to this, had to reduce capacity due to the pandemic. But have been working to ensure that they have the right safety and health protocols to be receiving these children and to ensure that they can receive more as needed.
Well, Ms. Odom, you want to pick up on what the commissioner was saying and maybe assess overall capacity in New York under pandemic conditions and how close to that we are?
Thank you, Brian. You know, capacity, I think, remains robust in New York. I do think that the pandemic has forced legal service providers to be creative to meet the needs of very vulnerable migrant populations in our community. For the children, for unaccompanied children, you know, KIND has been providing services remotely and in person for critical situations as needed over the past year. We are preparing for an influx, have seen the rise of numbers starting to trickle in to our program here in New York City, and are also monitoring what is happening at the border, what is happening at the Customs and Border Protection facilities, decompression facilities, and the new ORR intake shelters, and trying to look ahead to try to assess, you know, what the needs of these children will be once they reach their cities of destination.
And Commissioner, I do want to talk mostly about the needs of these children, as Ms. Odom was just saying, and their quality of life when they come to New York. We'll also talk about what's happening at the border itself more generally. But can you put any basic numbers on what capacity is in New York and
Sure.
how close to that we are?
Yeah, of course. So we have roughly had in the past the three New York City-based providers. There's another that you indicated outside of New York City directly, but the three New York City-based providers have had the capacity in the past of serving roughly 1,000 unaccompanied children. Our understanding is at this moment, there are approximately 300 or so children who are in New York City that are based with these providers. And in addition to that, kind of over the course of several years, on average, about 3% of children who get placed with one of their sponsors do so right here in New York City.
So, Ms. Odom, can you take us through some of that process? I'm sure the vast majority of our listeners are completely unfamiliar with it. Who does a child who comes unaccompanied to the border tell that they want to come to someone specific in New York, if they have family in New York, and how is that request acted on?
Sure. Thank you, Brian. First, I think our listeners should know that these children are fleeing violent conditions, and most recently, the traditional push factors that are so rooted in violence have been exacerbated by two major hurricanes that hit the region, as well as the pandemic and the loss of life and infrastructure in the region. They do approach the U.S. southern border under various circumstances. Many of them travel alone, a long journey. Sometimes they travel in groups of adults for safety. And they seek the southern border for a number of reasons. One, to apply for protection. And more often than not, as is the case of children arriving in New York City that we work with, they are coming here to reunify with a parent or a legal sponsor, or a legal guardian, rather. So their first encounter will be with U.S. authorities at the southern border. At that time, they will identify themselves as minors. Customs and Border Protection will treat them, hopefully, as such under the law. And they will be processed, and they will be briefly in CBP custody, with some exceptions right now due to the large influx. And after that, they will be transferred to the custody of Health and Human Services, particularly the Office for Refugee Resettlement. It is at that time when the children will likely be in a shelter near their parents or legal guardian, and they will speak to a case manager, they will speak to a legal services provider and have a lengthy intake interview, and we will learn more about their journey, more about their story, what drove them to take the journey on their own to the U.S., and the particulars about their family situation and with whom they seek to reunify. So it is at that time when we learn more about, what their options are for reunification, and then we will assess their needs in a trauma-informed way to see what other supports they will need, both while in shelter but also after release.
Thank you for describing that process. Commissioner Mustafi, when we talked about this on the show during the Trump administration, part of the context was that the children were being forcibly separated from their parents, as we all know. How different is it from a legal or social services perspective to house and otherwise help children who've been forcibly separated from those coming alone now voluntarily?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And I want to underscore a couple of things to build on what Maria shared, which is, the process that she just described and what this sort of normal process, as opposed to what we saw under the Trump administration, presents is a system that is codified in our laws, meaning we have the Refugee Act of 1980, which indicates that those fleeing persecution or harm can come to our country and seek safety or refuge. We also have the TVPRA, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which was passed in 2000 under the Bush administration, that codifies the process, particularly for unaccompanied children and trafficking, and children who have been trafficked, that Maria has described and that her organization does a tremendous job of advocating for. So the distinction here is the process is occurring as it is required to under U.S. law for unaccompanied children. And as Maria noted, there's some challenges given what we saw with complete erosion of these systems under the Trump administration, but even more so, really decades of failure to address, the best way to invest in these systems and ensure that they work in the way and with the standards that they're required to under law. And with the Trump administration, with the zero tolerance policy, that effective separation, that horrific policy that resulted in family units who were coming together being separated, is not the situation we're talking about now. We're talking, as Maria noted, about unaccompanied children who are coming by themselves, presenting themselves for protections, and in most cases seeking to reunite with a family member or guardian.
Right. But, Ms. Odom, one of the issues at the border is children being housed many days longer than the 3 days allowed by law for these temporary holding facilities. So are you in a legal battle to get the Biden administration to adhere more closely to that deadline, even if it's different from the battle you were in with the Trump administration? And if so, what are they supposed to do with so many kids who they may not be able to find really appropriate placements for that quickly?
Sure. You know, I think it is a very, it's interesting. And I think it's important for listeners to understand that, you know, HHS, Health and Human Services, is mandated, as the commissioner stated, to take care of these children. Under a settlement called the Florence Settlement, you know, the government has the guardrails for the care and custody of unaccompanied minors in federal custody. During the Trump administration, ORR was criticized for keeping 13,000 beds online, you know, available for children who are arriving, when there were small numbers coming in, because the Trump administration, through Title 42 executive order, prevented children from entering the U.S. and actually expelled them. So there were thousands of children expelled in 2020. ORR came under a lot of criticism for keeping these beds available, which are sorely needed now. So that takes us to the current situation, where we are now seeing, you know, the results of expelling unaccompanied children at the border and preventing children from seeking asylum and protection in the U.S. And we're experiencing that backlog of driven by Trump policies. Now, that is for the Biden administration to address, and they have resorted to the use of influx and decompression facilities to handle the overflow and to be able to serve the children safely while waiting rapid reunification with their parents or legal sponsors. So whereas traditionally the child will go from the Border Patrol station to an HHS facility, there is now an interim temporary shelter structure, both on the CBP side and ORR, to handle that influx. And although those facilities are certainly not appropriate for long-term sheltering because they are not licensed, they are, we believe, in our view, appropriate for this very temporary purpose of housing the children while the government moves swiftly to achieve rapid reunifications with the parent and legal sponsor. So we are seeing some progress on the part of this administration, and that is a drastic change from the Trump administration. I think the Biden administration is engaging the experts robustly, and it is evident that they have deployed a cross-government interagency response to this that includes FEMA, the Red Cross, and also civil society. So we are seeing a radical shift. It is a very critical situation right now, given the high numbers that we are seeing, the high number of arrivals.
Yes. So the intent is certainly the opposite of the Trump administration. I think everybody gets that, to try to help these child migrants rather than just try to resist their entry. But of course, it's a very complicated and unacceptable situation at the moment. Ms. Odom, the Biden administration is trying to tell families in Central America that the U.S. border is closed, but at the same time, they're saying they'll admit unaccompanied children. Here's a clip of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on Meet the Press on Sunday.
The border is closed. We are expelling families. We are expelling single adults, and we've made a decision that we will not expel young, vulnerable children.
Now, you used to work in the Department of Homeland Security. Is that not a mixed message that encourages the surge because it's a welcome mat compared to Trump? And he is saying we're letting all the kids who come unaccompanied stay here.
Thank you. I think what the Secretary of Homeland Security is saying is that we will abide by our legal obligation to accept and process unaccompanied minors pursuant to the TVPRA, as Commissioner Massafi referred to earlier. We have an obligation to accept these children. We have taken the position from the implementation of the Title 42 order that those expulsions of unaccompanied children were in fact unlawful. The Secretary does not state it so clearly, but what we are seeing is it's a commitment to accept the children pursuant to our lawful obligations to accept these children. And that, you know, the TVPRA is a bipartisan piece of legislation that has been supported from on both sides of the aisle since its creation. It is a legislation that really should be protected, and we should not deviate away from the protections created by this law when things get tough. We think that the structure, the system should always strive to improve it, and we could have a whole show about how to improve the reception and care of unaccompanied children in this country. But it is not a decision that should be made at a time of crisis. And this is the time for us to step up and serve these children who have desperately been seeking protection, particularly over the last year when the doors of the U.S. have been closed to them.
Well, Commissioner, to what degree would you say this surge is serving the interests of the children who are coming by the thousands? And to what degree is it a net negative for them because of the conditions they're having to endure here and along the way?
Yeah, I just want to add one thing to what Maria noted, which is that, you know, at the very end of the Obama administration, they created a small or minor program that was designed to try and address the challenges of youth traveling on their own through, you know, treacherous conditions to make their way to the border, called the Central American Minors Program, which gave folks the opportunity to apply to reunite with a family member who was here lawfully and with whom they could reunify without taking that journey. The Trump administration immediately ended that, and the Biden administration has begun to reinstate that. And I think really importantly in all of these conversations, we have a broken immigration system, right? And one that requires affirmative action to improve, whether you know, that's rooted in the root causes or looking at the conditions on the ground in the home countries where these individuals live and where these families live, and improving the conditions there because of climate change, because of natural disasters, because of gang violence and so much other things that result in them coming, and or creating systems where you can apply within a dignified, humane way from abroad. You can seek reunification. And like Maria said, we rigorously uphold and defend these laws that make sense because they're about making sure that people are able to live safely and in a dignified way, particularly children. And in terms of your question, Brian, you know, the conditions are really awful. You know, Maria spoke to two hurricanes that happened in the fall. That internally, some statistics say internally displaced over 1 million children in Guatemala and Honduras, villages completely knocked out. This is exacerbated by the conditions that the pandemic had already created, you know, just incredibly difficult conditions on the ground for families to be able to survive. So you can imagine if you have a parent, a guardian, a loved one that's in the United States, that the means of survival is only trying to have that reunification. And we should defend that. And we should be proud that we're a nation that believes that that's the right thing to do, because nobody should suffer in that way. Even reporting of people, of young people starving, it's just not acceptable. We have a lot of work to do that includes radical long-term change. But in this moment, we should stand up and be proud of who we are and accept them.
And I understand what you're saying, but my question was, do you think it's a net positive or a net negative for this very large group of children that is surging at the border in recent weeks, given the conditions that they're having to endure here and along the way? In fact, let me play another clip of Secretary Mayorkas. We're going to queue up an additional clip here that we have of the Homeland Security Secretary, this time on CNN on Sunday, again telling people not to come, and in this case, citing an example of the dangers along the way.
We have communicated, and we will continue to communicate to the children, do not come. I was going to mention but a minute ago that we encountered three children under the ages of 10, three siblings, whose mother was murdered during the journey. Mm. Do not come. Give us the time to build an orderly system that will enable you to make your claim under United States law without taking the journey and imperiling your lives.
So, Commissioner, to follow up on what you were saying before, can you react to that clip in terms of the perils and what the message from the United States should be to families in Central America?
Yeah, you know, Brian, I find it challenging to sort of speak for what is in the best interest of these families, right? To sort of make that decision. In so many of the stories, it is that people have been waiting, in some cases years, right? That they have been trying to sort of survive with almost nothing. And those are personal decisions. Migration is often that are often incredibly complicated and result in really grave risk and consequence. And that's not certainly for me to speak to. But what I recognize and what I think you've heard from both Maria and I is if the journey is indeed made, then we need to abide by our laws and to receive them in a welcoming and dignified way. But as a country, the fact that these journeys are made and we have for decades done nothing to address, a different system that allows folks to apply in a safer way, and the root causes or the conditions on the ground that make life so unbelievably unbearable, that's, in my view, the biggest challenge. And I empathize as a government administrator with the secretary's remarks here, and understanding that we don't want to put anybody in those conditions. You wouldn't wish that upon anybody, certainly not your own family, friends, or loved ones. But those are decisions that are being made for survival. And I can't, we can't put ourselves in people's shoes as to what sort of sparks that assumption of risk.
Thank you very much. New York City Immigration Affairs Commissioner Bita Mustafi and Maria Odom, Vice President for Legal Programs at Kids in Need of Defense, or KIND, and she was previously the Citizenship and Immigration Services Ombudsman for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security under President Obama. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.